Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What makes a city thrive in 2017 and beyond? We're broadcasting live from the new SDPB Black Hills Bureau in downtown Rapid City. We're inside the historic Part Central building on Main Street. Stop down and say hello. We have a live studio audience today. We've been very supportive. We thank them for being here with us. And joining me now in the studio, sitting next to me, is the president of Dream Design International, Hani Shafi. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
How long have you been in Rapid City?
Off and on, about 36 years.
Okay. International, Dream Design International. Do you work all over the world then in development?
Well, we've done projects, overseas and some other states, but mainly we focus on the Black Hills region.
Let's talk about this building that we're in and how it relates to sort of downtown Rapid City. Let's start with economic development and real estate development and growth in downtown Rapid City.
The entire community is seeing a really great time right now as far as growth. And downtown specifically has started with the Main and San Joe streets in the early 90s. The city and the state have done a great investment to attract businesses through rebuilding the two streets in downtown and doing a tremendous job with the landscaping. And then the private sector got involved. The City of Presidents and some of the local art community has contributed a lot for that. And then developers got involved, including myself, to really try to put our two cents and put some money into the downtown. Currently, the city and the whole community is teaming up together to really achieve that revitalization process into the downtown.
What's the history of downtown Rapid City? When we say revitalization, did it have a heyday and fall into sort of, some empty buildings and some decline, or has it been strong over the years?
It's like any other community, especially in this size, where the malls came in and they attracted the major retailers out of the heart of the downtown. And in the early 70s, the Rushmore Mall kind of took the anchor businesses from downtown, left a lot of empty storefronts, and the main thing that was left are bars, not even good restaurants. It was mainly bars and stuff like that. And some of the old businesses that existed downtown, we did not realize the importance of the history and the historical significance of those buildings. And some of those buildings, unfortunately, were tore down and turned into parking lots. And those parking lots are still vacant, generating no taxes and no impact on the downtown itself. So hopefully the city has realized the importance of those properties, and they're trying to work with the private sector to redevelop some of those places. I wish the historical buildings were still in existence. I think that would have been a lot more critical for the downtown than empty parking lots.
When buildings go up now, are we thinking toward the future? Are we thinking that this will someday be a historic building? I mean, this building that we're in now was, renovated as a historic building. It was saved. When architects build new things, is that part of the conversation of what should go in?
It is critical to really respect the historic surroundings of any area within the community. In the downtown, there are areas that have been designated as historic district areas, and there are some buildings that are historic buildings. Regardless if it is in the historic district or not, if there is something that is being built, it has to show some respect to the surroundings and be consistent and complementing to what's around it. You could build new and still complement the past, especially if you make it fake historic building, it really do disservice to the existing historic buildings.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What does a really vibrant downtown Rapid City look like, and how close are you to being there? What needs to happen next down here? That's three questions. So let's let's start with what does a really vibrant downtown Rapid City look like?
A vibrant downtown has to have people living downtown. And we have to really do everything possible to attract people to live downtown. And the reason I say that, it's not only from the impact on the downtown, but also the environmental and ecological impacts such activities do for our environment. You know, if people live downtown, number one, they'll end up walking to facilities or to restaurants or to work or what have you. That provides for a healthier population. If we drive less, we do impact the environment a lot less. So it achieves a lot of things by doing that. By people living downtown, the businesses downtown, instead of the businesses around the outskirts, will also thrive just like the ones that are in malls and what have you. So it's got a lot of positive things to have people living downtown.
How close is Rapid City to having what you would consider a vibrant downtown community?
I think I've never seen the people in the community, regardless if it is the public or the private sector, pull together as much as they are today. So therefore, I think we're a lot closer than we ever been. How long is it going to take? It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of coordinated effort from all parties to really make it a success. And I think there are two or three projects that have provided for living quarters downtown, which have been really successful. And I hope a lot more of them will start. And I know we are trying to do two of those right now. So it's hopefully we'll get them under construction soon.
One of the things that several people have mentioned to me as we've been out here this whole week is the cost of housing in Rapid City. And let's talk a little bit about affordable housing and, you know, how that plays into your thoughts on a daily basis and your business.
Well, you know, it's amazing how the cost of construction has gone up in the last 20 years beyond what anybody even could imagine. Unfortunately, the wages have sat stagnant during that same period. You know, the construction costs may have gone up by 5 to 10% a year. Unfortunately, the wages have not gone up more than 2% or 1.5% in some cases, and sometimes they stay stagnant depending on the profession. So therefore, the affordability that existed 20 years ago is no longer there. So a lot of the people who were able to afford to buy a house or even have a decent apartment are no longer able to do that. So therefore, we have to look at the wage scale and the construction cost. Right now, and that's not just limited to Rapid City, that includes every place around the country.
Right.
So therefore, a lot of the designers and a lot of the communities have relaxed their zoning and requirements as far as size of units, spacing between units, and what have you, to allow for less units area and to be able to achieve the price that can be afforded by the people. You cannot really compromise on the safety, so therefore you see some units with sprinkler systems to ensure that fire codes are requirements are met and that the safety of the people is protected. Currently we're doing 28 homes. We worked with the city to do what has been done in other communities where the units are going to be approximately 900 to 1,000 square feet, and they're homes for people who really could not afford the $200,000 or the $250,000 home. And those homes will start at about $165,000. And that's the first, you know, segment of about 80 homes that we will be delivering to the market in the range of about 160 to about 180,000.
Do you find that the younger generation, people who are just starting out, are looking for smaller spaces and a little less overhead, or is it going to be a broader market than that? Is everybody just looking for affordable housing?
Well, you know, almost everybody is looking for affordable housing, but the younger generation are a different breed than themselves. You know, I mean, everything that they do is completely different than what the norm has been. And that's
how so? Give me some specifics.
You know, it's like they're more mobile than the previous generations. So they tend to really focus on quality, not quantity. Okay. So it's like, and they would rather rent than buy. They would rather focus on spending more time outside the home instead of inside the home. So it's like, and they would rather travel and socialize than having to stay at home. The big backyard and all that kind of stuff is a thing of the past, you know, as far as, you know, designing for these guys.
Right. But this is the Black Hills. It's the biggest backyard you could ever ask
exactly.
for.
Exactly.
That seems like an opportunity for growth in the Black Hills then with the younger generation, that this area would offer exactly what they're looking for as long as you provide the services and the housing that they are also looking for. Is that how you see it?
Yes. Yeah. We're really blessed in the Black Hills. We have one of the best kept secrets around the country.
Right.
You know, it's people don't realize it until they go somewhere else. They go see what the traffic is like, what the pollution is like, and what the lack of amenities. I mean, you could go basically 2 miles outside the city or even areas within the city and still go hike for a couple of miles without really having any issues.
Tell me a little bit about your work in the medical community. Let's talk about bringing more advanced medical services and recruiting physicians and such to the area. How does that play in with you?
Well, currently we just actually as part of our plan for the downtown, we worked with the USD Medical School, and we actually just had yesterday the ribbon cutting for their new facility downtown, just a few blocks from here, where we designed and remodeled and leased to them a space that fits their needs. And we had a few of the folks from the East River and from Sanford Health and from Sanford Medical School yesterday in for the celebration to really open the facility. And that's one step to really have some of the doctors that go to school there get some sort of interaction with the rest of the community and enjoy the downtown and feel a sense of belonging. That way they don't leave the community and go somewhere else after graduation. Hopefully we retain all that talent within our community. Incidentally, that school, I did not even realize it, they actually they have to take the board exam for the medical board, and they had their 100% passing, which is, you know, far exceeding the national average.
Right.
That tells you how much talent that is really created within our community. And that talent, you know, it just leaves the community somewhere else. We have to find a way to attract these folks and have them stick around within our community. And the only way to do it is having them create memories within the community. It's not really just going from the school to the dorm. It's going to the school, interacting with the community, going out to a restaurant and eating with their friends and what have you, and building such memories. So that's one thing. And then on the practice side, we define actually in every project that we do and in every aspect that we do in our company, we try to define the community needs and try to satisfy those needs. So currently we found out a couple of years ago that a lot of our patients that have surgeries and that really don't require a full-scale hospital care or that intensive care, but at the same time they cannot go home because of the lack of care at home, and they cannot go to a senior citizen home or a nursing home because of the lack of expertise within there, because they require, these patients may require more attention than what a nursing home could offer. So there is an industry in itself which is called skilled nursing facilities, And those are, they have on staff doctors, and they have full medical staff as far as nursing and what have you. And their patient to doctor ratio is a lot better than a nursing home, which does not have on-site doctor. So therefore, we worked with the state to try to issue more beds for such use, and the state just issued an RFP to have about 75 beds to be utilized for such use in Rapid City, and I think 120 in Sioux Falls and 40 for the rest of the state. And since Sioux Falls and Rapid City have the most medical facilities, they have the lion's share, and they have, of course, the higher population. And as our population is aging, we really need those type of facilities. Currently, our patients who are having those type of scenarios get transferred to either Denver or Billings or Minnesota. So that's money that is spent somewhere else instead of spent in our community. And it's a lot costlier for those patients and their families to really travel, and creates a lot of physical and emotional and monetary stress on those families. So this facility, which we're teamed up with a company out of Colorado, we intend to, if we get the bid from the state, to build the facility and own it and operate it. There are a few doctors that we will be retaining to be working on that facility. And hopefully we will provide that service so we could eliminate all that stress that our population faces. Those are the some of the things that we are doing with the medical community. We teamed up with the Rapid City Regional Hospital, and I think we gave them, we sold them a piece of ground at a reduced rate, and they're doing a new about $50 million facility for sports medicine and orthopedic center. And we also worked with them on some of the other aspects within their hospital. We actually, our company gave them about $1 million donation to get started with some of that stuff.
When you talk about meeting needs in the community, have you had the opportunity to work with any of the tribal communities in the Black Hills region?
We actually, you know, of course, the Native American causes are very dear to me because, you know, I came up from a background that, you know, experiences the same obstacles that they do, regardless if they're self-imposed or not self-imposed. So, therefore, we have worked with them on different issues. On the education, we defined that there is the high school graduation rate is very small, I mean very low, and the sustainability in college, or people sticking around in college, you know, they don't last too long. So therefore, we worked with a college from Bismarck about 3 years ago, United Tribes Technical College, as an experiment. And we located them downtown for about a year. They could not really survive, you know, regardless of what issues. I really cannot tell what issues they faced, but they could not survive. So that did not materialize. We worked with the Native American also on the healthcare. You know, we're currently building a $4 million building for the Tribal Chairman Health Board, which is an education group that does preventive medicine and health education. And that building is going up, and hopefully it will be opened in, about the middle of January. And then as far as the education, we just did a site where we gave sold the land for a reduced price for Rural America Initiative, which is really a great program. Bruce Longfox is running that program, and he's done a wonderful job for the last 25 years, you know, trying to help kids stay in school And his graduation rate is amazing as far as getting those kids to school, then graduating from school, and then going to college. He far exceeds most schools around the state and probably around the country. And he's done a great job. So we felt that we really need to provide him whatever things that he needs. And so we did our, at least our part, and hopefully we could do more to help him out with that program. He intends to break ground on that facility. It's about a $6 million facility, I think in October or early November.
Will you tell me, you mentioned personal obstacles. Will you tell me a little bit more about that? Elaborate on personal obstacles. If you don't want to, you don't have to. We can talk about something else.
It's no problem at all. You know, I actually, growing up, I grew up in a small village in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. So it's no running water, no electricity or stuff like that, which a lot of the old folks around here have experienced that. But, you know, to experience that in the modern age that we live in today in the 20th century or the 21st century is kind of hard. And I'm sure there are a lot of other communities around the world and even parts of the United States, unfortunately, that experience those things even today. And we shouldn't have people anywhere around the world, let alone in the United States, experiencing such living conditions. So hopefully as a private sector, because we try to rely on the government a lot, but as a private sector, I think we should do our part and not just leave it to the government to help those people.
Can you tell me how you got from there to where you're at now in the sense of what kind of character, which parts of your personality sort of helped you get to the role that you play now in Rapid City and beyond? From those early years, looking back, what were some of those strengths that you had?
Well, I remember Grandpa. You know, he used to go to work at about sunrise, and he doesn't get home until like sunset. And I think I'm doing about the same thing. So my wife is kind of always on me. You know, it's like, hey, you know, it's like, but you know, that's the hard work ethics. And then, you know, when you experience hardship through your growing up, I don't believe that you forget that. So you try to give back to those who need it. Yeah.
Annie Shafi, I want to say thank you so much for being with us today. Hopefully you will come back and join us again in the future.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.